Empower Radio presents The Farkas Files, an exploration of energy, metaphysics, and the paranormal with David Franklin Farkas. The Farkas Files. The truth is in here, somewhere. Here's your host, David Franklin Farkas.
Good evening. Thanks for being with us and spending a little time with us and our adventures every week. This week, we're going to be talking about some really fascinating things. I posted something on Facebook about possession and exorcism, which started a little conversation and led to meeting tonight's guest, Galen Reed. And we're going to have an interesting conversation about a topic that most people have a hard time with. And I think it's more matter of fact than most people realize. But first, tonight's metaphysical musing. And I'm sitting here in weather that makes absolutely no sense. Here it is, the end of May, and we have weather like August. It's hot, it's humid, and it's going to be this way for 4 days. And I'm wondering, what in the world is going on? And of course, there are all kinds of explanations for that. And in the middle of all this is one of the simple, mundane things that happens at the end of every school year, but importantly, at the end of all of school experience, which is that my daughter is graduating high school. And so tomorrow night is prom night. So let me tell you, we have a lot of excitement and interesting goings on getting ready for that. And then there's all kinds of awards and things next week and performances and then graduation and all kinds of things. And all that's fun, but as I recall anyway, it's also pretty terrifying. The transition from being a high school kid, especially when you've just turned 18, so you're also an adult, to figuring out who you are in the world is really a massive change. Sure, she's got her plans to go to college in the fall. She's going to a very prestigious university in Boston. But still, you know, it's like, okay, everything that defined who I am is suddenly not going to be there. I'm not a high school kid anymore. All that structure, all the people I used to see every day, the buildings I used to go to, the town I used to live in, all that stuff is not going to be there anymore. Suddenly, it's history. And you can visit, but as we all know, you can visit, but it's never the same as when you were living it. So I'm sitting here wondering how much of that my daughter is conscious of and how much of it will kind of settle in over the next weeks and months. But it also means something for me as well, because I am suddenly going to be an empty nester. My life has been structured around my daughter's schedule for her whole life. I was the stay-at-home parent. I was the one that was home after school. And even since her mom and I got divorced, she's lived with me half the time. It's the structure of my life. So, you know, the joke is, what am I going to be when I grow up? And my answer is always, well, I haven't grown up so far, so I don't think I have to. But certainly the transition of having no child that you have to take care of every day is going to be very, very interesting. And as you know, one of the themes of the show is walkabout, is going off into unknown territory, you know, the classic thing being going out into the desert alone. But going out into unknown territory, not knowing what's there for you to learn and what's there for you to deal with, what dangers are there, and going into it knowing that you will have what you need. You'll be told what you need to do, and you will have the courage and the strength to take whatever steps are necessary. And so I'm watching my daughter go on her walkabout, going out into the world, but it's also a walkabout for me. What exactly am I going to do with all this unstructured time? As somebody said, you know, I'm unsupervised and the possibilities are endless. So just putting into context the idea that walkabout is something that's happening to all of us all the time, and that these major transitions are very much a spiritual experience and a spiritual challenge as much as they are a practical challenge. So a lot of love and a lot of blessings to my daughter, Mira, and we're going to have an interesting time seeing where this all goes. So that's tonight's very personal metaphysical musing. And let's introduce my guest tonight, Reverend Galen Reed. You with us, Galen?
Yes, thank you. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
And Galen and I have only exchanged a few emails and Facebook posts, so this is going to be, in many ways, a first meeting and learning what you do. So why don't you do a little introduction about your work and what you do, but also tell us some about your walkabout, about how you got into this work and what the challenges were getting to your level of expertise.
Yeah, thank you. Well, first, I'm president and founder of Sanctuary of Interior Light Ministries, and we are a ministry. We perform the works of the ministry, burials and baptisms, weddings. We also work with people to discover their identity in God and to know that they are participating in their reality. And most importantly, we lead them into a right relationship with themselves and with God, the God of their understanding. You know, so everyone has to take the first step on the path. Most of the time, people will revert back to their childhood religion. For myself, my interest and passion in God began when I was a child. I knew I had come from somewhere, and I couldn't quite remember where, and it seemed that I knew that the energy of the earth here, what I would call today, third dimension, was very powerful, and it was like getting saturated in third dimension and going to sleep and not really remembering my spiritual purpose or my mission, my vision. So as a child, I had experiences, and you know, my mother was very, she was baptized Jehovah Witness and left the church and had gotten into, I'm sorry, my phone for some reason, I didn't turn my cell phone down. She had left the church and began her search in Wicca. So mm-hmm. I had felt her conflict very early. Between the church, the Jehovah Witness, which are very legalistic and, you know, it seems off the top, traditional and organized religion and belief system, and Wicca would have been a big no-no.
Right.
So when I was little, I was exposed to her books, and I had read many things. You know, she had the tarot in our house, and different witchcraft books, and we had the Bible, and I would open the Bible and never really could understand that book. It seemed veiled to me, and it was confusing. And I saw things as a child, and kind of gets right into our conversation tonight as, you know, I had seen The Exorcist when I was a kid, and it really affirmed a lot of the experiences I was having as far as the unseen.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a terrifying movie.
You know, I've never seen that movie.
Really?
And I've never seen, there are some very good movies, including some good movies about exorcism, that are accurate and are not written for the particular reason of being a horror movie. Horror movies are designed to get your adrenaline pumping and freak you out, and I have no interest in that. You know, I'm interested in having a question presented to me in a way that I would not have thought of asking it, or seeing something in a different context, especially when it confirms something that I've experienced. So You know, if people want to see stuff about exorcism, I tell them to see the movie The Rite, which is based on the book about the Vatican exorcism school and the experience of one of the priests going through the school and his experience with a master exorcist who'd been doing it for decades. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, it's dramatized, and they took, you know, a dozen cases and made it one person and all the things you do to make a movie. But it is a very it's much more accurate to what really happens when you're confronted with that kind of thing than the horror movies are. And part of the problem is that people get their misinformation, which they think is accurate, from TV and horror movies. And then they're all creeped out, first of all. And secondly, they have no idea what the real stuff is about. They just know there's this scary thing they don't ever want to have to deal with.
I think they're right in a lot of ways. If you look at The Exorcist, it really is depictive of what they did show in The Rite, you know, which is a reason why I really liked The Rite, and that because in the Exorcist, she's a priest discovers a little statue, and I think he's in Africa, and somehow she. I think she may have received this or something. Somehow she's connected with the priest and what's going on in Africa, and she's really opened up, you know, psychically as a kid. So she goes through experiences, and the Roman Catholic priest comes in to perform the exorcism. And first they send her through a series of medical testing.
Right.
You know, trying to figure out what's going on, if she's mental or what's happening, and then the doctors finally are exhausted, and they tell her to seek a priest.
Right.
And, you know, she's a non-believer, the mother. It's pretty good. By the time they got to the second and third ones, they got really, you know, absurd.
Yeah, having the head spin completely around some of the other stuff that are the classic pieces of that movie. I'm like, yeah, you know.
But I was like 7 years old when I saw it. You
right,
know?
That's part of the problem is, you know, very young kids see stuff and they're getting bits and pieces that are accurate, and the rest of it is horrifying.
And it's really hard to separate that out for them when they're little.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it really is, and I've really shielded my kids from that when they were a lot younger, you know, to not sow that in their mind and to not be afraid.
Yeah, I'm just chuckling because for some reason my daughter has gotten into watching vampire-related stuff.
Thank God
not Twilight, but she's watching The Vampire Diaries, and for a while she was watching Supernatural, and at least with Supernatural, I can laugh at the stuff that's, some of it is fairly accurate, and some of the stuff is just off the walls, especially in terms of how they intervened in things. But, you know, every vampire story makes up a new set of rules of how the vampire world works. It's pretty funny. But people are attracted to that. You know, people are attracted to this whole realm of stuff that's both scary and exciting and mysterious. And, you know, in my work, and I'm guessing in your work as well, it's none of those things. It's nuts and bolts. There's a problem to be solved. There is something that has happened that is causing a problem, and you have to do what's necessary to solve the problem, you know, get the person out of the predicament that they've gotten themselves into. So how did you wind up? I mean, obviously you saw ghosts and other beings when you were a kid, which was not my experience. I started seeing later when I was in my 20s. But that's an interesting start. At least you had a family where they were supportive of seeing. Your mom was doing things where I would think she was supportive of it.
Well, and we, you know, after being out in the world, it was kind of like that going to sleep and because some of it was a little bit strange, you know, for those around me, I put myself to sleep, I think, and for many years just ignored that aspect, maybe what, you know, you were referencing before we came online, you know, about ignoring it or being so afraid of it.
Right.
Because it was, it really kind of went back to her conflict, you know, between the church and the more, you know, occult, mystical, whatever type teachings, and to integrate that with that deep belief in Christ, you know.
That's really a typical pattern until this past generation of Indigo and Crystal children, who, you know, they know what's real and you're not going to talk them out of it. But, you know, kids always have had a broader range of perception than adults, and adults tolerate their imaginary playmates until the point at which they decide they have to grow up, and they tell them, no, that's make-believe. And eventually the kids get talked out of it, either because it's not worth the aggravation of what the adults are doing to them, or because they really just start trying to be good kids, and, you know, adults define reality for kids. The Indigo kids are coming in and they're like, you don't see it? That's your problem. You know, for me, some of my experiences, I apprenticed with two shamans for 3 years, and part of that time, for half of that time, I worked nights in a psych hospital on a locked unit. And I could already see, I was already doing the work, but it's interesting being in a place that says that seeing things that the doctors can't see are hallucinations and make you crazy. And I could see who the people with voices were talking to. And so there was a tremendous, it was an interesting school for me to be in a place where I could see what the relationships were. And the people who were dangerous were not talking to ghosts. They were being harassed by demons. And it was real clear who had what going on and what was happening. And it's in a relationship between a doctor and a patient in which the patient can see there's a third party in the room and the doctor can't. The doctor says, you're seeing something that's not here, you're crazy. And the patient is saying, there's somebody here, you're crazy. And, you know, it's a conversation that can't possibly work except that the doctor has all the power in the situation and can give you meds. But it's two worldviews and two experiences. And when people ask me about this stuff and say, as they often do, it's, you know, this stuff is really strange. It's like I didn't notice, you know. I don't believe in that. And it's like, well, of course you don't. You have no experience at all that would confirm to you that this is real, and everybody has told you it's not real for your entire life. You have absolutely no reason to believe me. But I have experiences that confirm it, and I know many, many other people that I work with that have experiences that confirm it and can confirm my work, and we get results. So for us, you know, there's no doubt in my mind because I have the experience, and experience trumps belief. Belief is all hearsay. Somebody else told you this is true. You didn't have any reason not to believe it, so you believe it. So for any skeptics that are listening, I totally understand that if you have no experience of non-physical personalities, which is an easy way to think of them, you have no reason to believe it until you run into it. And I think in many ways, the whole paranormal investigation explosion of, you know, paranormal groups is people wanting to have an experience that confirms for them that this is real. That life doesn't end and there really are these entities that don't have bodies, and look at that, it's real. So
yeah, I think a lot of people, that's awesome because they are seeking that experience. do want to know. You know, we do want to know why we're here and what's going on with that. You know, is there a purpose? Is there a reason? Is there something mystical and magical? And
I think, at least for me, mystical and magical is basically stuff that's not easily explained in the mundane physical world. You know, it's not necessarily unusual. It's just that most people don't think of it as being normal, so they make a big deal out of it.
Third dimensional is more normal. What's
right,
solid?
Right, but I don't think there's any mother that doesn't know when their child gets hurt. Right. I certainly know I've got that connection with my kid. You know, many life partners, twins, lots of other people have very profound telepathy with the people that they're close to. And for other people that don't have that, it sounds just off the walls. And for the people that do have it, it's an everyday thing.
Right. That's a lot of misinterpretation in that, too, when the two are communicating.
Sure. I mean, it's certainly not as... Well, I was going to say it's not as clear as sending text messages, but text messages can be pretty garbled, too.
I think the internet is a really amazing thing to arrive on the scene, because the internet really kind of seems to activate or show its arrival, because you really have to rely on another level of knowing or interpreting when you're back and forth with someone online. That's a really neat experience, you know, when you realize you are inwardly communicating and you're writing these very short sentences.
Well, even a cell phone, you know, people have no problem believing that this thing in their pocket that has no physical connection to anything else can communicate with people all over the world by telephone, by text, by, you know, email, by internet, all these different things that we can do with a smartphone. And as you know, if you look at it, it's just magic. You know, I'm enough of a geek that I actually know a little bit about how complicated the technology is and how amazing it is. But for most people, they don't care. They're just going to use it. It just works. Okay, that's whatever it is. And the internet, in many ways, is an analog for the interconnectedness of the energy grid of the universe.
Right.
You know, everything is connected to everything else. If one connection doesn't work, it automatically reroutes you through a connection that does work. Anything that's on the internet anywhere in the world is accessible from anywhere at extremely high speeds. And that's basically the experience of anybody that does psychic or healing work. Is shifting your consciousness from the physical world, which you're calling 3D, to the non-physical world, to energy, what Einstein would have called energy, anything that doesn't have mass. And all of a sudden, everything is available as you develop
your... That inner guidance, those inner senses, that like that knowing when your child is, you know, the inner telepathy and... I think that would really save on phone bills.
When my daughter got her first cell phone when she was about 10, and she didn't respond to me one day. It gave her a longer leash, and she was out in town with a friend, and she didn't respond to me. Her friend was a little bit of a bad girl. And when she got home, did the appropriate stern dad thing. And I said, well, I knew you were okay. And she said, how'd you know I was okay? I said, I can always tell whether you're okay or whether you're in trouble. I can usually find you. And her eyes got really big and went, oh, like, yeah, you really are in trouble.
What does that mean? Oh, that's funny.
Well, you know, it's the good news and the bad news. She knows that I've got her back. I can tell when something's wrong. And because I do remote healing and clearing work, if there's something going on, I can do something about it. And I do get text messages from my daughter and actually some of her friends that say, would you clear me? Something's not right here. And would you check the house? Because they know that's just what I do. It's just an everyday thing for me. And they've had the experience of feeling better after I do it. So they go, okay, there's a way for me not to feel like this and not to be scared. And I'm going to do that. I'm going to call Mira's dad and ask him to do that. So that's an everyday thing for me. And I'm sure there are people listening right now shaking their heads going, really? No.
I think it's an interesting point of what you're bringing up about the clearing and, you know, for those on the path, that they do that inner, you know, and a lot of it begins in the psychology of their beingness, kind of the spiritual, mental, emotional thinking and feeling patterns, because that really opens people up when they think negatively all the time and open themselves up to those, you know, little spirit attachments hanging out and negative thought forms. It gets in the aura. And to do that work every day, building that psychological immunity.
We're coming up on a break. Why don't you give everybody your web address so that they know how to find you?
Yeah, thank you. That's www.sanctuaryoil.com, SanctuaryOil, Sanctuary Oil.
Fantastic. Yeah, and if anybody would like to make a comment or ask us a question, if you have a Twitter account, you can tweet to @FarkasFiles and put the hashtag FarkasFiles somewhere in your message, and it will pop up magically on my screen through this incredible experience of the internet that we were just talking about, and we can address your question during the show. So we're going to take a little bit of a break, and then we'll be back with Reverend Galen Reed in a few minutes, and we're going to talk more about all this fascinating and strange stuff. Well, not for this show, but here on the Farkas Files. We'll be right back.
This week's episode, Bobcat in the Cave.
Gosh, Johnny, playing in the cave sure is neat.
Oh boy, a kitty cat.
Sassy, the kitty cat's yelling.
What, Sassy? It's not a kitty, it's a bobcat? Speaking of cats, you like to stress the importance of adopting cats from animal shelters? Over 5 million cats go into animal shelters every year? And with millions of healthy cats to choose from, it's a shame more people don't adopt from shelters.
This bobcat's heavy. Help, Sassy!
Why bother? We'll just get into more trouble tomorrow?
What's that supposed to mean? Oh, nuts.
Sassy is brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org. Remember, adopt.
Hey, Larry, mind if I sit down?
Nope.
This coffee tastes like coffee. So what's going on?
Not much.
What's new?
Not much.
Okay, but can you please put the newspaper down while you say not much?
What newspaper?
This newspaper. Oh, dude, what happened to your face? I see one, two, three, four, five, six.
Ow.
Dude, what is this? 11 pieces of toilet paper stuck to your face?
I'm shaving in the dark to save energy. I'm helping the environment.
That's a dangerous way to help the environment.
Well, sometimes you have to sacrifice yourself for the greater good.
Dude, there's an easier and safer way to help the environment without sacrificing yourself. Go green, go public. Take public transportation. It's good for the environment and you won't have to live behind a newspaper.
Wow.
But for now, put the newspaper back up.
A message from the public transportation systems across the country. To learn more, visit publictransportation.org.
Ranger Station, Ranger speaking.
Yeah, hi. I'd like to report a bear sighting.
Location?
My backyard.
Oh, your backyard. Try telling a bear that.
I did, and this bear talked back.
Talking bear, that's rich.
No, wait, it was Smokey Bear.
Smokey?
Why didn't you say so?
I did say so.
Continue.
I was burning yard waste.
No, boy.
He told me to burn legally and responsibly, and to remember that if it's too hot to touch, it's too hot to leave.
And as always, he's right. You know, 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans. That means 9 out of 10 wildfires can be prevented.
Yeah, I know that now.
Thanks to me.
Actually, thanks to Smokey.
As usual, the talking bear gets all the credit. Get your Smokey on. Always burn responsibly and contact your local fire department for open burning regulations. Because 9 out of 10 wildfires can be prevented. Brought to you by Smokey Bear, the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council. Learn more at SmokeyBear.com.
Only you can prevent wildfires.
Now back to the Farkas Files with David Franklin Farkas on Empower Radio.
And we're back with Reverend Galen Reed from the Sanctuary of Inner Light. And let's talk, you know, what we said we were going to talk about was possession and exorcism. And it sounds like you've had experience with that. So tell us a little bit about that experience.
Oh, I think it was about 20 years ago, you know, after I kind of gotten out there into the world and pretty much forgot about anything spiritual, you know, God-related from being a child. And I was kind of traveling the back of the, what I'd call the negative ego, and indulging myself and my senses. And I had gotten into addiction, you know, had a pretty heavy-duty drug addiction. And one day I woke up in a motel room and a thought seemed to come in from outside. You know, it wasn't what I considered an inner thought, something of my own. It came in from outside and said, "Who is God?" You know, I thought, wow, that's a really good question. So I, you know, reached over and pulled open the nightstand and pulled out the old Gideon that's in about every, you know, hotel, motel in America. Mm-hmm. And couldn't see. You know, it made no sense, absolutely no sense. And I began to comb bookstores and libraries and in the search of, you know, this question that had come to me. And I wanted to know, yes, who is God? And during that time, it seemed like all hell broke loose in my life. You know, I was having experiences and seeing things and felt like I really had a demon attached to me, you know, in there somewhere. And I just knew I wanted to get it out. And I had sought the churches and, you know, kept opening the book. And one day I had I really cried out and I needed to know if God was real because I was, you know, I had overdosed during that time and left my body and had experiences outside of my body. I had made the wrong choice. I had killed myself again for what I had understood as, you know, about the third time. And I had no more chances. It was, you know, I got to do it in the body. I have to learn to embrace the body. And I had really had this kind of inner thought that I had to get out. But you don't get in by getting out. You have to get in to get out, you know, in the body and loving earth life. And I had given up, and I had overdosed while, you know, during this time through a series of real personal experiences, and I was seeing things around me, and I knew that God was really my only help. And so I called upon God, and I felt the drugs, you know, Jesus kind of showed up in my living room and pulled out the drugs from my veins like water. It felt like water leaving me, and I smelled, you know, roses, and I opened the Bible, and I saw scales fall from my eyes, and I could see the Word, I could see. Mm-hmm. And it was an amazing experience, and that was about 20 years ago, and I went to, you know, got into a very in-depth study and spiritual program, you know. It was kind of like my inner rehab, that I had going on, overcoming codependency and victimization and learning the difference between what I, you know, negative ego, carnal thinking, and the higher self, the Christed mind, and had really connected back then to the Kabbalah. Mm-hmm. And had a complete experience through that time with the Kabbalah. It was like receiving a huge download of information. And I spent many years integrating that, anchoring that, trying to understand what the experience was. And, you know, there was definitely what I feel today were very Luciferian energies around me. And drugs was part of it. The depression, the oppression. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, the pattern that you're describing is a really common pattern. And I don't know if this was your experience, but it's typically related to some kind of childhood abuse as well that teaches you to be out of your body when you're under, when you're feeling helpless and under attack. And but the drugs will push you so far out of your body that basically parasites, energetic parasites, will show up to feed on the negativity that has been swirling around you because of the life that you're leading and the drugs that you're doing and all the rest of it. And if they get hold, they can eventually take over. So, you know, in many ways, being able to do it as a personal experience by calling out for help is incredibly powerful and impressive because most people need help. And my first experience with a full-blown exorcism, you know, I'd done stuff getting ghosts out of places and that kind of thing, but I stopped by my teacher's house one day on the way back from something I was doing, and it was in the evening after regular office hours, and he answered the door and said, "What are you doing here?" I said, "I don't know. I was told to stop by." He said, "Well, come on in." And the phone rang and there was someone screaming in a way I had never heard anybody scream. And he's trying to calm her down. He said, "Okay, I'll be right there." He's pulling paraphernalia out of a bottom drawer. And he looked at me very nonchalantly and said, "So you want to do an exorcism?" To which my response was, "I knew I stopped here for some reason." And you know, it was like the movies. Walked into a room, you could feel lots of entities everywhere. It was like the room was full and this woman was in tremendous pain and confusion in the middle of the room. And you know, we did what we did, and suddenly what was going on with her was not going on anymore. She was free of it. And people think it's, you know, when that happens, it's all over. Well, it wasn't. You know, she had to go to a psych hospital and calm down and sort it out and all the rest of it. It's not something that people necessarily just walk away from.
No. It's like you're thinking, you know, you go forward and you renew your mind and get good sleep and, you know, eat good food and, you know, stay on that path and strengthen your psychology and your, you know, your psychic bubble, that shield.
Learning how to protect yourself, learning how to keep things cleaned up and all the rest of it. But as I started doing most of my work remotely, and I got more and more people who I found had either ghosts or demons attached to them, I started, since I'm a geek, I started reading the literature, because there's lots of books on this stuff.
Yeah.
And I decided to read only books where the author had PhD or MD after their name, because I wanted to be able to quote people that skeptics would accept in some way. And most of them were clinical hypnotherapists. And over time, what they discovered was if they talked to what appeared to be another personality of that person and considered it an alter ego, a part of them, they couldn't get a resolution for the patient. But if they talked to it as if it really was somebody else who was taking over that person's personality, they could get that entity to leave and they could work through all the different personalities and eventually have the original person being the only one that was there. And they really didn't like that very much when they started realizing that. And the same thing happened with past lives. If somebody was telling a story and explaining the story as if it happened to them, but in another life, in another time, in another place, you can look at that as a fantasy, or you can look at that as actually having been a real event, however that would work. And they found if they considered them fantasies, there was no resolution. And if they considered them past lives and helped the person through hypnosis go back to that event and resolve their feelings about it, that there would be a profound healing and the person would be free of it.
Well, that's amazing.
And it got passed from one clinician to another. So there's decades of clinical information by these people who are scientists in clinical hypnosis who are working with a spiritual concept because it works. And they have to accept that there is some reality to this because it doesn't make any sense otherwise. So even though they're not psychic, even though they can't, they're not using any of the message that spiritual practitioners would use, dowsing or psychic skills or anything else, they're making the assumption that the patient is telling the truth. And out of acknowledging that and working with that, they can help the person to heal. So it's been really fascinating. And as I do my work, I find an incredible number of people, you know, may not be fully possessed where somebody's taking over the physical controls, but certainly have entities that are draining their energy, entities that are inserting thoughts or ideas into their minds, all kinds of things, and have no idea that's going on. Have no clue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm looking at it as really difficult for people because they can't, you know, to visualize that. It does bring fear. And I think, you know, what engages the condemning aspect of self because it,
right.
You know, those things are, you know, they target the weak spots in individuals. And
Right. It's always preying on the weakest, on the weakness of the weakest person or their moment of weakness. And, you know, we started talking a little bit about Catholic exorcism. The assumption in Catholic exorcism is that if someone's possessed, they're possessed by a demon. And ghosts can possess people and take over the body and do all kinds of things. And I'll bet that everybody listening has seen that. They just don't know that's what's going on. If anybody has ever seen somebody get drunk and then they become that person where everyone says, you know, when you're drunk, you're like another person. Well, they are.
Sometimes many people.
Yeah. Yeah. And it may be that, you know, different, basically ghost drunks are playing games, and it could be more than one personality, but you can watch them slowly get further and further away from their body, make no sense. And then suddenly this other personality shows up and they're the life of the party. That's a possession. It's a short-term possession, and when they sober up, it goes away. But that's a possession. And if you have somebody,
The Hawaiians call that an eating companion.
I love their expressions. That's so cool. But if somebody is a blackout drunk and they don't remember any of it, it's because they were so far out of their body that it literally wasn't their experience at all. They were just off somewhere. And they show up at some point as their body sobers up and they become more attached and then they become conscious and they have no record of it in their memory. You know, if they have somebody, if one of the hitchhikers is really malevolent or it happens to be a demon, that's when you get somebody who in the middle of that has a possession that doesn't disappear when they're sobering up. But a lot of violence and a lot of the stuff that we watch in the world and go, how in the world could they do that? It's not them. It's not, or, you know, the people that do mass murders and say, that wasn't me. Well, maybe in that moment it wasn't. That doesn't mean that they're not responsible for their actions and all the actions that led up to it and made it possible for them to be possessed in that moment. But their personality may not have been the one that was in control at the time.
I find that some people that, you know, a lot of people that do drugs or drink and then really, you know, some of the ones that I was ordained through the IMU, and, you know, we worked with clients that were under psychic attack, and in a lot of cases, a lot of them were on psych meds, but, you know, some of the cases, if they were drinkers or heavily into drugs and studying the occult or, you know, New Age teachings or whatever, it was really extreme in the thought forms, very demonic in those unconscious states. And,
right. Well, yeah, I think it's hard to lump all of those things into one category and say they're all dangerous. Because there are some of those teachings that are wonderful and deep and powerful. But the problem is that people dabble. They don't know what they're doing. They don't know what they're working with and get themselves in trouble, just like dealing, you know, playing with anything else that's powerful. And
I really, you know, did that in my own path. I mean,
Right. And most people start out there. But hopefully you find a teacher that's not, that has some depth and experience and really is a master of whatever they've learned and can guide you through the stuff safely. And the problem is that a lot of people don't. And especially, you know, teenagers playing around with occult stuff, especially Ouija boards. You know, they'll do a seance, they'll get some results. They think it's very cute and nobody can see the pattern that the kid that committed suicide or the kid that wound up in a psych hospital or the kid that got raped and is now pregnant, that all happened within weeks after they were playing with the Ouija board.
Right.
Because of possessions that happened when they opened that portal. And it's really common. And, you know, when I interview people before I work on them and I see some of the attachments, I'll say, well, when you were a kid, did you do this or this or this or this? And they'll go, oh, yeah. I'm like, And what happened to your friends? And the stories unfold in a very similar pattern all the time. So it's, you know, the old TV joke, don't do this at home, boys and girls. That's really wise.
And we mean that.
Right. Right. You know, and, you know, as something to play with, the Ouija board is really dangerous because it works. You know, for somebody who is well trained and well versed in how to use it as a tool safely, that's a whole different story, but it's not a toy. Got a lot of other things that people just play with and go, oh, you know, I found out I can do this. It's so cool. And like, yeah, no, don't do that.
Into it for the phenomena or whatever, you know. Yeah.
Right. You know, it's like, this is so cool. I'm going to go, oops. So, yeah, it's the occult and a lot of the other practices can be a problem because they actually do work and people can kind of fall into things that they just can't control. They just don't know what they're doing. And for somebody who had studied with a teacher and had a couple of years of experience and had been guided through things, it's not dangerous at all. So
it really felt like, you know, a lot of what I was working with, like with the aspects of Kabbalah, that I really wasn't, you know, I connected really with almost a knowing that I had brought this understanding with me of looking at the tree and then working with the meditations and the divine names and, you know, what I was doing consciously, unconsciously was really a big factor in my healing. You know, as I became aware of, you know, both light and dark, but also that the methodology does work. There is a method to most, you know, if you want to call them magical systems, but, you know, like you say, I mean, they do work and they are powerful. And to cleanse and clarify our consciousness, I think the the scripture really gives an awesome depiction of that, of overcoming that dualistic, negative ego, carnal, lower self, separative thinking, you know, where all those things reside, anger,
right,
you know, oppression, lust, whatever, and integrate that mind of Christ, that oneness, that win-win, that protection, the abundance, the joy, you know, really work that program and, you know, to start there to gain control of the inner desires and the emotions and the subconscious mind and the inner child and, you know, the inner parent, the critical voice and, mm-hmm. you know, all of those aspects of self and, you know, and then, you know, calling in the magical systems. You know?
Right, right. You know, you have to learn the basics. You have to learn how to crawl before you can walk, before you can run. And if you just pick up a book and experiment with the stuff that the runners can do, you get hurt. So, you know, there are many different paths and many different ways to do it. And you have a wonderful system that you work with. And, you know, it's just not something to play with. I just wanted to claim, going back to a thought that was kind of hanging out in the air. You know, the rite of exorcism that the Catholic exorcists use is very, very powerful, and used in the right circumstances in the right way can be the right intervention. But because it's only focused on demons, it doesn't work on ghosts, and it's not necessarily the right tool for all circumstances. So, but, you know, I do this stuff and I do most of it remotely, but I have half a dozen other people all over the world that I consult with that are practitioners that do the same thing. Some of them do it on site and some of them also do it remotely. So it's not like there aren't lots of people that are very competent in doing interventions if people need them.
Right.
So,
Kimberly and I were talking about that today, you know, because, you know, it's kind of like a spiritual profile. You know, we get connected with a being and we've worked with those beings on determining on what level this is manifesting.
Right.
You know, if it's a spiritual, mental, emotional, or physical deal, and then working from there in that place, and there's really not any area in that we don't deal with at soil. One thing we haven't really touched on is like maybe a little bit in a few minutes ago about the implanting.
Right. You know, because except as often happens, we're almost out of time. So we shouldn't go off in another direction, but we certainly can talk another time. So I'd be happy to have you back. And I know Kimberly was talking about being interested in being on the show.
Yeah, that would be great. Thank you.
So that would be another topic that we can go into. Give people the information on how to find you again.
Yes, at www.sanctuaryoil.com. And we're at admin@sanctuaryoil.com if you have any questions.
Yep.
You can email me or Kimberly.
And Sanctuary Oil is Sanctuary of Inner Light, because I was kind
of Interior Light, yes.
Interior Light, because I was thrown off by the URL a little bit. I want to thank you so much for being on the show. Great conversation, and we have a lot more to talk about, so let's do it again.
Yes, definitely. Thank you. Have a good evening.
Thank you so much. Wow, what a great conversation. And as you can tell, I've got lots of stories and lots of experience in this area, so this is a topic that's always interesting and juicy for me. If all of this has made you curious about my work, you can find me at househealing.com, househealing.com. And cleverly hiding on the contact tab, you'll find every conceivable technology for getting in touch with me, including my online scheduling calendar. I do a 20-minute assessment and reading to see what's going on with whatever the problem is you'd like me to look at and how my work might be helpful. So please take advantage of that. So thank you so much for spending some time with us. Thank you one and all for being here. And Until next time, this is David Franklin Farkas for the Farkas Files. The truth is in here somewhere on Empower Radio. Have a wonderful week.